It's the Musical Theater Book Club. Let's talk about a show. Welcome to Musical Theater Book Club, where we talk about our favorite musicals, our least favorite musicals, and everything in between. I'm Berkeley.
I'm Sarah.
And today we're switching it up. We're not talking about a show. We're talking about choreography in general, as you can see from the title. We've decided we want to give sort of an overview of how choreography came to be in musical theater and just some choreographers to watch out for and some dances to check out. So, Sarah, you're a dancer, right?
Totally. Such a dancer.
I'm a mover.
I mean, we both watched most every episode of Dance Mom. So I think logic, it makes us dancers.
I know at least a little bit. I was in Chorus Line, so I'm a dancer. That's what that means.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you do shows. So, I mean, you're closer to somewhat of being a dancer.
Although all the shows I've done recently, especially, don't have to dance in. Right. Mr. Banks did not dance. Either did the Escapologist. However, when I was chorus in that show, in another show, I did some slight choreography. It was more movement, and I'm a really good mover, so, you know, got that. Awesome, let's go into it. So, obviously, dance has been around forever, since ancient times, but we're going to jump forward to America in the late 1800s. This is where the theatrical dancing sort of gets its start, at least in America, and it actually develops from minstrel shows. I think one thing, especially while doing this research, that sort of interests me a lot is how much they borrow from these smaller scale entertainment, like minstrel shows and vaudeville and all these other things. And they take a lot of ideas from these smaller scale productions and take them to a place that they normally never would see. And I think that's cool, but I think there's also some appropriation in them as well that we'll get to eventually.
I think we saw that overlap when we talked about like the history of Broadway. Like that was also kind of something. So yeah, it seems like they took like bits and pieces from these smaller scale things. And
these type of shows were never allowed on Broadway, but they were presented in the Bowery for lower class citizens. But in the Bowery is where these dances were like developed and they were given names. That's why we have all these cool names. And that's one thing that I think is really cool, because you think of these smaller scale show or lower class entertainment, I guess is what we could call them. It's an option. And that's where we get a lot of the cool dance moves that everybody loves. And all those like fun names like the Jitterbug. That's the first thing that comes to mind. And that is not the right time period. But that's always just the first thing that comes to mind when I think of like dance names.
I know, I can't think of any now. Like I'm just thinking of ones that are probably like way later too. I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, I think especially for like our age, I feel like a lot of the dance moves that we would know the names of are going to be like 1960s.
Yeah.
50s, more 60s though, like the mashed potato.
That's the one I was thinking of.
I mean, the shopping cart is pretty modern, right? Stupid. So we've talked about the show before, but The Black Crook, it's one of the shows that really paved the way for musical theater choreography. I didn't know when we had talked about it before, I guess I didn't really look much into the show itself, but did you see what sort of how the choreography in The Black Crook happened?
I didn't know. I read about the fire, but I didn't know about the... Yeah, so...
Yeah, no, I had no idea. So basically, due to a performance, the show had to be... The Black Crook had to be merged with a ballet performance, which is why it was so long to begin with. But then this helped lead to the development of burlesque and vaudeville, which Broadway ends up taking a lot from, which we sort of mentioned already. I think that's really kind of funny that that's how it happened. Because The Black Crook, it was a play before? Do we know? I think it was a play.
Probably. I feel like because of that timing, probably.
Yeah. So then, in the early 1900s, theatrical dancing really began to develop. Ballroom dances and social dances were adapted for the stage. Specific techniques were used, such as unison dancing and tableaus. And then the idea of the chorus girl was also developed during this time. I think this is sort of where we start getting the language of what it means to be a dance on stage. That's not necessarily like a ballet.
Yeah. And this is around when we start to see the Ziegfeld Follies, which I mean, I think even if like you're like me that I don't really totally know what that is. Like I definitely have heard that name before. Like I know like, it's something that you kind of hear, even if you're, like, not someone that's, like, I feel like someone that's, like, in dance or in theater, you've probably heard the Ziegfeld Follies. So that took the idea of the Chorus Girl and developed it into this giant, lavish production numbers.
At this time, dance started to become a main influence on the Broadway stage. However, by this point, the dance was not influenced by the story at all. It was just sort of like a little break from the plot. And at this time, a lot of these dances were taken from the Black community, which is what I was talking about earlier when I meant, like, appropriation. Like, it's one of those things where I'm, like, not okay with, because you're taking from this community, and yeah, you're putting their moves on stage, which is great, but you're not representing them on stage. And I think that's one of my biggest issues with it.
I mean, same.
So the person to really bring choreography to the storytelling forefront in American musical theater was Seymour Felix. He was working on Ziegfeld's show Whoopi, and he convinced Ziegfeld that the story was important, had to be told through dance. So his dances ended up having their own story. They helped with the overall plot of the show, but then they also were like their own, like, little climaxes. They had their own little climaxes, and they told their own little part of the story. And that's sort of where we really start to see stories start to develop in dance. And I think it's funny that there's sort of like this blockage, because it's not like storytelling in dance at this time wasn't common. They were doing it in ballets. And I mean, obviously I'm not a dance historian. I could not tell you dance history, but ballets at this time were telling stories. Ballets had been telling stories before then. I think it's interesting that in American musical theater, dance was more of like an entertainment type thing, and then became storytelling came later. I think that's interesting how it sort of almost went back and then went forward. It
just makes me think about when we talked about our, like, the history of Broadway one, and we talked about how, you know, kind of started with, like, operas and those sort of things and then became musicals. It's almost kind of the same way as we're looking at this choreography one. It's like, I'm doing hand motions, like, people when they listen to this will be able to see it. But it's like, it's almost like two rivers next to each other of, like, here's the operas and here's the ballets. And then around this time is when they kind of combined into musical theater. Because, like, you know, like, opera is, like, telling the story through singing, ballet, dancing.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's, like, a lot of the stuff we see, at least in the development of American musical theater, has already been going on, and it's not like they're like new innovations or new ideas. Like, dance was already telling stories, music and operas were already telling stories, and then sort of the combination, it was like Americans were like, we need to figure this out, how do we do it, and the rest of the world is like, we're already doing it. And I mean, like, what's new?
Yeah, so the first successful examples of this was the 1940 show Pal Joey, which my favorite thing about that show is that I've never heard of it before Avenue Q. So the dance combined the flashy entertainment and further enhanced the plot and character development. So it taking the flashy dance to further the story and not just have it as middle breaks.
Mm-hmm. And that Pal Joey, I looked it up and I did it. Oh, I did write it. So that was 1940. So then in 1943, we start making big leaps and bounds. 1943 was when Oklahoma came out, and the choreographer of Oklahoma was Agnes DeMille. Just a little background that I thought was really interesting about her as I was looking into her life. She originally wanted to be an actress, but told she wasn't pretty enough. So she was like, I'll be a dancer. I think that's so sad. I didn't write it down, but her grandparents, I believe, were both playwrights. So that kind of stuff was in her blood. And she ended up winning the first Tony for choreography in 1947 with Brigadoon. But sort of what really makes her stand out is that she used the idea of the dream ballet. So she is classically trained. She worked in ballet. She started her own dance school. But in Oklahoma, at the end of Act One, there's a whole dream ballet sequence, if you haven't seen it or you don't know the show, where Lori has fallen asleep and she's dreaming that she's marrying Curly, but then Judd comes in. But when they walk down the aisle, it's Judd or something like that. But it's a whole ballet sequence. Before this, dance was often used, like I said, as a dramatic break. But this idea of the dream ballet gave us insight into the heroine's mind and really furthered the plot and helped us tell Lori's story. The dream ballet then became a fairly regular idea and has been used in a number of musicals. I mean, I think one of the biggest ones we're actually going to talk about in 2 seconds. So I'll wait.
I just looked it up because I was like, really? And I feel like I need to, like, re-familiarize myself with some of these shows because I apparently have just, like, kind of forgot them, or I'll probably be like, oh, yeah, duh. But, yeah, things like Oklahoma, Carousel, Guys and Dolls, Cats, Bye Bye Birdie. There's more, but I was just like, oh, yeah. So because at first when you said that, I'm like, I couldn't think of any off the top of my head. But now I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about, you know, in this and this and this.
I think one thing too, especially as I was researching this, we do have these ideas where dance is moving a line, like straight taken from the idea from Agnes DeMille's idea of the dream ballet. And as we move throughout time, we sort of lose it. Like, I was thinking about dance today, and we can get there a little later on, but dance in shows today doesn't do that much.
Like, they have it still? Like, there's definitely still dance, obviously. Like, yes. I can't, like, there's not going to be a way to do a musical without dance. Like, that would be weird.
Yeah.
But it's not, the movements, I feel like, aren't as noticeable, or they're not as, like, big, I guess is the way to put it. Like, they're not as, like an example, I was trying to look at some this morning, and I was like, okay, what are some shows that have big dance numbers that I didn't do as my Tony pick, because I picked some of the good big ones already when I did when we did the Tony's award performances. And like one of them, like I was watching the Hairspray one, and it's like they're dancing. Like, don't get me wrong, it's a ton of dancing in the last, but it's nothing like memorable, I guess. Whereas like some of these shows that we'll talk about later have like those dance moves that even if you don't know who the choreographer is necessarily, you'd be like, oh yeah, I know this kind of dance or this dancing number.
Exactly. That's, and even the choreography now, like there's beautiful moments in it, but for the most part, like dance breaks that happen, they're just there for entertainment purpose from what I've seen. Like the one that keeps coming to mind, I don't know what song it is, but Mean Girls has a dance break. One where it looks like they're all doing the like, I don't know. I have no idea what song it is, but I'm like, this doesn't tell any story. Like we're just dancing, which is great. Don't get me wrong. I love it. Like, but there's no further movement in the plot, which modern audiences don't want giant dance breaks like the Dream Ballet anymore, for the most part.
It's kind of interesting that you're saying that, because now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of funny because it feels like they're kind of going back to that idea of having dance breaks. I mean, they're not very long, but dance breaks where it doesn't further the plot, because I'm thinking of like Beetlejuice does that. Like they kind of make fun of it too, but they're like, they literally go dance break and they have like 2 minutes where they're dancing. It has nothing to do with the show. It's just like literally Beetlejuice and Lydia just dancing. Mm-hmm. Or even, let's be real, even in Hamilton, they do that. Like they have in Yorktown, and it's like, it's not, and don't get me wrong, I love it, and I'm not saying cut it, but it's like, it's not necessary as far as like advancing the plot. So that is kind of cool in a way that it's kind of going back to that. They're not as long as these entire like dream ballets are. You know, they're usually only like maybe a minute or two within the song, but it is kind of cool in a way that they are kind of going back to that. Like, here's just a dance number just to kind of have some dance in it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So the next choreographer that we want to talk about is Jerome Robbins. He's worked on shows like On the Town, King and I, Peter Pan, West Side Story, Fiddler on the Roof, and many others. And a lot of his shows, like there's a couple lists that you can look up of like best choreography numbers. A lot of his dances are on it. He actually began in ballet and worked with, I believe he worked under Agnes DeMille, but he believed that whoever controlled the movement is the person who controlled the show. And this is, if you watch West Side Story, this is so evident. So evident. And one thing that I love specifically about West Side Story is that even though we do have, like, there's full-on dance sequences, like the Dream Ballet in Oklahoma, and we're still telling a story. We're telling a whole story with it, and I think it's really, it works really well. But I think, I was thinking about this earlier with some shows that I was watching, how he said that whoever controls the movement controls the show. And I was like, interesting. That's a really interesting way to think of things. So the next choreographer we want to talk about sort of changes things a lot. Bob Fosse.
It's not important.
Nah, not important. And it's interesting. Like, I feel like Agnes DeMille and Jerome Robbins are really known for their innovations they've made. But Bob Fosse is known for his style. Strictly his style. Because it's so different. So some shows he did, Sweet Charity, Pippin, Chicago, and many others. Like I said, he had his own style, and it was very evident in his choreography. Like if you watch, you can watch a dance number and you're like, oh no, that is 100% Bob Fosse.
And I feel like you said this too when we talked about our Tony episode, I think, because I remember you had picked Pippin as one of your shows that you like the Tony performance, and I think you had said that back then too about how if you watch the revival, like you can still see like those, which I mean it's a revival, but it, like, you know, sometimes they change things, but you can still see those moves like within the revival and all that. Yeah, too.
You can, because while, like, specifically with the revival, while they're doing, like, all these circus things, because it was a circus theme, they have people walking on their hands, they have people doing trapeze and whatnot, juggling, you can still see people doing that Fosse choreography, the slow walk forward with the hands waving behind. There's I don't know the name. I'm sure these moves have names. I wish I knew the names of Fosse's choreography. But the leading player does one of Fosse's go-to poses. They do the small isolations with the hands. So, yeah, just little things that distinguish his choreography are, like, turned in knees, which is very opposite of what we're told. Isolations, he does shoulder rolls, and he actually was the person who created jazz hands. Maybe not created it, but that is a distinguish of his choreography.
Did you watch the show? Just wondering.
I meant to, and I've heard so many things about it. It's on my list.
Okay, same. I heard it. I think it's on, like, Hulu now or something. It's on one of the streaming sites. So I was like, oh, I got to watch this, but I still haven't yet. And I really wish I had in preparation. That's what I should have done in preparation for this, was just watch it. I've heard great things, though.
Yeah, I've heard very good things. He had an interesting life from what I was reading. One thing that I loved is that, so he uses a lot of props.
Sorry, as you said loved, I saw the word and I started laughing.
So one of his trademarks was the use of hats as well. And part of the reason is because he was bald and wore hats all the time. So he would wear hats, and it's probably one of the reasons he put hats on dancers. But he uses hats a whole lot. I mean, look at almost any of his shows, and you can almost, there's always at least one person in a top hat. And I'm here for it. So we could go on and on about Fosse, but the best way to experience his style is by watching his work. And when we get into a little more, when we get into talking about some dance numbers, I have a Fosse number, and I highly recommend it, but we'll get there. The last choreographer that I really want to talk about is Michael Bennett. So he wasn't known for his style, but he was known for how the dance was motivated by the form of the musical and the characters. And the best example that I can give you is Company versus Chorus Line. So Chorus Line, we have one, and everybody knows, a lot of people know one singular sensation, every little meanings. But what people know from about one is the finale, and that's the nice polished, everyone is in a strict chorus line, all in their gold suits, all super precise. It's very rockettish. That's a new word. I'm trademarking it. No one else can use it. But there's a sequence earlier in the show, which I believe is actually called One, and the end is called One Finale. I did the show. I should know this. It's been years. But in the first one, they sort of break down the choreography, and it's such a cool movement. So, like, they'll break it up. Some people will do counts. Some people will do the singing. Some people will do the moves. So you have, like, 3-4, tip of the hat, singular sensation. That's just one simple example. So you have these points where people are isolated in these different poses. Like, they'll do the move. Like, someone will do the move on 3-4. Other one, someone else will do tip of the hat, and somebody else will do the move on singular sensation. And it's this cool sequence that I really love, and I couldn't find a good video of it, and I'm so mad. But I'm sure it's out there, so go look it up. But anyways, so in this show, because they're dancers and they're working towards this goal, everything is super precise. Then we go to Company, and in the second act, they have a song called Side by Side. And it's supposed to show a group of people that were pushed together to put a show together, basically. And he shows their physical limitations. In this song, he really shows the struggle of these people and really plays off their physical limitations. So you have these two very distinct styles by the same guy. And I think it's really cool to see how the story and the characters are really influencing that. And I think that's just another way of storytelling, where you're not necessarily moving the plot forward, but your dance is being influenced by the characters themselves. And I think that's what we have that's more common in contemporary choreography than anything.
So there is a bunch of Broadway choreographers. We talked about some of the big ones from older Broadway. We're going to just kind of quickly mention some of the other ones, because there is so many and we just don't want to have this be super, super long.
Yeah.
But there's so many more. So just some of the other ones that we were going to mention. So Michael Kidd, who did Finian's Rainbow, Guys and Dolls, and Can-Can. Grauer Champion, who did Bye Bye Birdie, Hello Dolly, 42nd Street. Tommy Toon, that did Will Rogers Follies, Best Little Whorehouse. Susan Storman, Crazy for You, Contact and the Producers. And then some of our more modern ones, you know, more recent to us. We have Casey Nicola. Okay. Casey Nicola, who did Spamalot, Book of Mormon, Mean Girls. Jerry Mitchell, who did Full Monty, Hairspray, Legally Blonde. Andy Blankenbuehler, who did In the Heights, 9 to 5, Hamilton.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he did 9 to 5. I think I did know that, but like,
I didn't know he did 9 to 5. He also did Bandstand, which is also very good choreography. he is somebody interesting to look at because he has this, his shows are all very different. I would look into the choreography. They're cool.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, I've seen, well, I mean, I saw your production, but, like, I've seen 9 to 5, and I've seen In the Heights and Hamilton, and, I mean, In the Heights and Hamilton, I would say, are similar, but, yes. Like, 9 to 5, I feel like, is a different, definitely yeah. different style of movement.
And then Bandstand is more swing and jazz related. It's really yeah. cool. Yeah, I would look into his work. His work's really good, too. I mean, they're all, everybody we listed on this list, and I think one thing that we haven't talked about that I'm just going to touch on really fast is our choreographers who also are directors. Like Jerry Mitchell, he directs and choreographs. Like Legally Blonde, he directed and choreographed it. And there's so many choreographers and directors that do that. So I think we really just have to give it up for them. Whoop, whoop.
Do some jazz hands.
So the other thing we wanted to do with this episode is list off some dance numbers in case you didn't know where to start. We wanted to give you some dance numbers to check out. Some of these are iconic dance numbers. Some of these are just our favorite dance numbers. So we'll start off with Step in Time. We both have this. Step in Time from Mary Poppins. This was Matthew Bourne and Stephen Mear. I never know how to say stay. I think I'm one of them. I needed a tap number on my list. That was my big reason for choosing it. And it's just so much fun. It doesn't necessarily move the plot forward, but I think there's a lot of things going back to the Michael Bennett thing. I think there's a lot of ideas that really get the point across that. Yeah, they're just chimney sweeps having fun.
Yeah, I actually have another tap number later. So this isn't my tap number. But yeah, I mean, it's a fun song. It's one of the ones when I first think of like shows, like early shows I've seen, it's, you know, it pops up in my head. Because, I mean, even in the, like, the movie version, like, they have, you know, the dancing with it. It's obviously not the same as the stage version. But I just, kind of similar to, like, when we talked about the Tonys one and I did Newsies, I just enjoy watching guys dance. And not in a weird way. I just realized that sounds so weird.
But just because
I feel like you don't see that as much, you know? It's usually a lot of these shows that have a lot of dancers are either, like, guys and girls or... mainly female. So it's nice to see shows that kind of have more of a male focus on dancing because that's not usually a thing that happens as much.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. The next one on my list was I Hope I Get It from Chorus Line, the opening number, Michael Bennett. I originally did want to do the one sequence and the one finale, but like I said, I couldn't find a video for the sequence, the learning sequence. But also I was thinking about it, and I mean, I Hope I Get It is iconic. Everybody knows that intro. If you're in musical theater and you don't know that intro, you need to stop what you're doing, like pause our podcast and go watch it right now. It's so iconic.
I'm just wondering, I mean, if they are listening to us, they should know it because I think you had picked that as your one of your Tony performances. So.
I think, yeah, I did. I
hopefully
totally
this
did.
Isn't the episode that you started listening to us on starting from the beginning. If not, you can go back to our Tony performance episodes.
True. But like I said, yeah, it's just so iconic. And from the show in general, there's just so many iconic moments and for choreography. And I just highly recommend looking into this show, period.
So for my next one, if I think of musical theater dance, and we talked about this, you had talked about this already a little bit, but if I think of musical theater dance, the very first show I think of is West Side Story. Yeah. And I realize, again, movie, show, whatever, but it was a movie that I had watched a lot with my mom when I was younger. So it has like, you know, that connection, but it is such a dance heavy show. And I feel like people who aren't into Broadway, that's what they think about when they think about Broadway. And they're like, well, I don't like it because it's all that dancing and not every show's like that. But it is, again, it's beautiful. So I did the West Side Story opening number and it's just, you know, again, you see all that movement and it is a really dance heavy show. And they just do it really well. I don't know what the recent revival looks like. I'm hoping that they kept to that. Oh, God, you're saying no, and I hate it so much. I'm not excited to talk about West Side Story in the future.
To interrupt you really fast about that. Yeah, there was actually 60 Minutes had like an interview, and they got rid of the snaps. They had the prologue in it, but they got rid of the snaps. And this sort of goes into one of mine, but I think it's interesting because there's a lot of things that are iconic to musical theater, like the snaps, which were not part of the music. They were added in by the choreographer.
That makes me really, really disappointed. I'm not, now I'm a lot less excited to talk about. They had a lot of issues with this revival is all yes. I'm going to say.
So my next one I'm sure is quite a shock for a lot of people, but I chose the Jellicle Ball from Cats. Yeah, I know. The choreographer is Gillen Lynn. It was a hard one to admit to myself. I was going to choose the opening number, but that I think the Jellicle Ball is just so much fun. Like I said, it's so much fun. There's so much techniques mixed in with all these cool moves. Like, as you're watching it, you're like, oh, look at that grand jeté. And then they're doing this, like, zombie walk forward. And I'm like, ooh, it's so cool. So you can see these Fosse-inspired moves in it. Not, I say inspired because they're not Fosse moves, but there's moments that they're very inspired by Fosse. The choreography is also super athletic. One person we didn't talk about, I think it is Michael Kidd. He's sort of the person that brought really athletic choreography into musical theater. He is an earlier choreographer, Golden Age choreographer. But this dance, if you haven't seen the Jellicle Ball, it's crazy. And like, not only are they dancing like crazy, but all the movements are very cat inspired, which obviously, like, they're cats, like, that's a stupid comment, but they do it really well. One thing I noticed as I was watching is you also get so much character from the cats as well, from each of the cats, specifically Rum Tum Tugger. But like, Rum Tum Tugger's characterizations of all the moves are very different than like Mr. Mistoffelee's characterizations of all the moves. And I need to go back and watch Cats. But like, I think people hate on Cats a lot because it's Cats, but it does a lot for the choreography of musical theater. And I think it sort of needs to be hyped up a little more about that. I'm not saying I like the show, but like,
I was gonna say, because I don't know Cats that well, but it is a pretty dance heavy show, isn't it?
It's very dancey. They have a recording of the original cast. One of my friends had it on VHS, but they have a recording of the original cast that they did. If you're going to hate on Cat, it's one of those shows. I mean, first of all, if you're going to hate on anything, research it and find out. And if you really don't like it afterwards, okay, hate it. But don't hate on something if you don't know it.
So this one was my tap number. Obviously, my go-to would have been Anything Goes, but I'd already did that for the Tonys one. So my other, just because I love Tap and Sutton Foster, my other one is from Thoroughly Modern Millie, Forget About the Boy. It's a Rob Ashford. It's not as long of a tap number as Anything Goes, but it is another one that's very, just fun to watch. I enjoy tapping. It's not a great show if you don't know it, but this song is really, really, really good. I really like the song and I enjoy the tap in it.
I don't know the show, and because I know it's a one that you recently tried listening to again and you had to stop. And now I'm like, one of my audition songs is from the show. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's a show from what it looks like. I think they could make edits and have it happen again. There is a gross racist, like, it's blatantly has a racist plot. Like, it's not even like an accidental racism. It's literally like a human trafficking with Asian people. Haha, because it's supposed to be based in like the 1920s.
Yeah.
So even though it's not, I think it was like an early 2000s show.
Yeah, 2001.
Something like that, yeah. Which makes it so much kind of worse in a way. Like, yeah. It's not even like it's like from the 60s, then that was the revival, and they were like, oh yeah, no, this is fine. So it's like, not great choice. Like, I think they could easily somewhat change some of the plot and try to make it better. But this is a great song. I mean, I love this song. It's probably one of my top Broadway songs that I like scream, sing, and pretend I'm good and pretend I can be Sutton Foster.
Early 2000s musical theater was very racist.
Really
talk about it.
Like, this is only like 20 years ago.
Yeah, not even. Barely. So the next song on my list is Favorite Son from the Will Rogers Follies by Tommy Toon. Tommy Toon's another person we didn't mention. He's a big one. We didn't mention him, right? Oh, we did mention him.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, we did mention him. But the Will Rogers Follies, I thought, was a lot older. It's early 90s. 93? 92? Early 90s.
I was thinking that was like a 70s show.
Yeah, no, it beat. Okay, let me see. Because there was all this.
Yeah, didn't we talk? I feel like we talked about this, though, too, at the same time. So I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it won Best Musical, but I can't think of what it was up against. It was up against Once on This Island. 91, maybe? Okay, but the music's by Cy Coleman. 91. But the song I chose is one that is really big in choreography world, and I just had no idea about it, but I chose Favorite Son. And what is so interesting to me about this is that everyone is seated in like a chorus line, and they're all doing just pattern hand movements. Doesn't sound that exciting. That was not a very good example of it, but it's super fast and super crazy, and it can't be done by yourself. You have to have people with you to do it, because everything is very played off each other. The other thing, sort of going back to like snaps from Chorus Line, their hats. So basically they do a lot of patterns with their hands, where their hands will go like cross your body, down, hit your knee, hit your foot, hit your knee to your head. Their hats are like tambourines.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, they have like the old, not straw hats, but brimmed hats. I don't know, the Harold Hill hat. Mm. Does that make sense? Okay. And I thought it was like Jingle Bells, but then there's a moment where they take them off and you can see it a little bit. It's like they have tambourines. Like the tops of them are made of tambourines. They're not made of tambourines, but like the brim has those. So they become part of the music too, like the snaps do. And it's really cool. And obviously that wasn't something written in by the composer. It was added in by the choreographer. I did mention like a call out to Fosse with the hats, which I thought was cool, but it's a fun number. In the musical theater class I work with, they teach it. And that's when I first heard of the number and I learned part of it. And anytime I think of it, I just think hat knee, foot knee. That's how you learn it. You don't necessarily learn counts, you learn the moves. And I think it's a fun number and I highly recommend looking it up. I wanted to put, I think they do it at the Tonys in 91 and they mix it up with another number, but that one is really cool. I highly recommend it. It's a whole dance. I would say Ziegfeld Follies-esque. In the sense that there's a lot of big chorus girl dance numbers, that being one of them. The whole premise is that Will Rogers is going to be president, or they're working on getting him to become president. And he like sits in the middle and then all the chorus girls are like lined up in front of him. It's a cool number. I highly recommend it.
All right, my next one. So this one's a little bit different. It is a musical theater number, but it was actually the Rockettes doing it. And I just thought it was an interesting. So they did All That Jazz. It looked like it was recent too. It was posted March 12th of this year. So like right before the shutdown. Literally the day before the shutdown. Literally. But it was just, I mean, it's short. It's like a 2-minute video. I mean, I had guessed that you had might have done, which I now say that you didn't, but I thought that you might have done Chicago, because I feel like after West Side Story, I feel like Chicago is the next one that when you think musical theater dancing, like that's the next show that really has like the moves and all that. But I just really liked, I mean, like I said, slightly different because these are, I mean, not that people on Broadway aren't professional dancers, but it's a different, I don't know, it's different in a way because it's the Rockettes, but it's fun. It's, you get to see their movements. They're all, say there's like 12 of them or 15 of them. I'm not sure exactly how many. But it's a good like 2-minute like All That Jazz tribute. Like they're not singing, they're just doing the dancing. But
do they do like more Rockette style stuff, or do they do Fosse, do you know?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think, because there is a couple times where they definitely do like a fan kick, which I feel like they don't usually have that in Chicago. But outside of that, like they definitely had the movements, like the very Fosse looking movements outside of those couple of fan kicks.
While we're here, let's give a call out to Chicago, because like you said, that's another big dance one, and I don't feel like we gave it enough hype in this podcast. So yeah,
it is. I mean, yeah, All That Jazz and
Cell Block Tango.
Thank you. I'm like playing the song in my head and I'm like, wait till I get to the words.
Cell Block Tango is another one of those prop pieces where they have like the cages and they're all doing those Fosse, like here's a foot isolation, here's a little snap type thing. The other one that's really big from that show is the Hot Honey Rag, done by Velma and what's the other, Velma Kelly and I can't think of her name, but it's done by the two female leads. And that's a really good song to begin with. But that's one of the big ones from that. I was looking at a list of like the most iconic songs and they listed, or most iconic dance numbers, and they listed Hot Honey Rag, which I don't know as much as I know like All That Jazz or Cell Block Tango. Yeah. But Hot Honey Rag is another one to definitely check out. And Chicago in general. And I mean, they have the movie, which I believe Fosse worked on a little bit. Fosse worked on a lot of his movies as well. Maybe he didn't do Chicago, but I know they at least will reference him.
From what I remember, it's a good adaptation. Like there's some that work well, and I definitely, like, I've seen Chicago both on stage and I've seen the movie, and it's not one where it's like, why did they take this great musical and butcher it? Like, it's definitely like a good adaptation.
That's nice. So my last one is The Rich Man's Fugue from Sweet Charity, which is my Fosse number that I chose. It's such a fun number. First of all, Sweet Charity is an interesting show because it doesn't sound like most other shows. It sounds, the best way I can think about how to describe it is like 60s sort of, or 60s, 70s theme show music. Does that make sense? Like, think like Wipeout. Like that kind of stuff. Now on stage. Sweet Charity, a lot of people, what people know from Sweet Charity is Big Spender. Hey, Big Spender. But Rich Man's Fugue is just a dance piece. And there's all these, I think it was 70s. There's all these different like movements that they do that sort of stand out. Like it's almost like at the beginning, she's doing like the worm, like the way she's moving her body. And there's two guys behind her and they're just in isolations, slowly moving. And they use that technique a lot to like where the chorus will still be doing moves, but they're very minimal. So like the main, there's one movement that stands out above the rest. And I think that was really cool. They do the typical Fosse backbend with the arms behind them, which I love. It's just so different than what we're used to from big chorus numbers. And I really like it.
So my last one, going back to something a little, I mean, I guess it's not really personal. It sounds like, making it sound like it's such a big deal, and it's not. So the last one I picked was Cross the Line from Bring It On, the musical, which Andy Blankenbuehler also did. And I just picked this one because this is, I remember when we went and saw this show, I remember specifically, I think this was the first time I really noticed a like choreography in a show. And I just remember, so I mean, Bring It On, it's cheerleading, if you didn't know. And I just remember watching it and being like, oh my God, because all of these, you know, all of these dancers have to do these crazy, like, you know, cheerleading dance moves. And they're like doing like the flips and all this stuff. But the thing is, like, they're doing it, especially at the end when they're doing, you know, like both of the schools are performing. So you know that these dancers are doing twice the amount of jumping and dancing and moving around than the like the lead actors and all of them have to do, because they're either performing for school A or school B. And I just remember when we saw it, like, that was the first time I had really noticed like dancing in a show. And I mean it's cool, it's definitely not anything where I'm like, you know, this is the most amazing dance move, because it's just like cheerleading moves. But I just remember being like, that was the first time I really was like, wow, like, look at these, you know, ensemble dance members that usually don't get as much recognition or notice. You know, when you go to see a show, you're seeing like person A, B, C, and D, who are the lead actors. You're not like, oh, I can't wait to go see Jill Smith, who's on the ensemble of this show. So it was just one that I definitely just, I remember seeing this and just being so in awe of their movements and all of that. And it kind of like, since then, I tried to pay attention to the ensemble. It doesn't always happen, but, and I think it's kind of funny because I don't think there's been another show that I've really noticed ensemble until I went and saw Hamilton. And it could just because I saw it so many times that I started watching ensemble members. But I just think it's funny that like those are the two shows where I really started paying attention to like not just what the lead dance people are doing, but like the ensemble members are doing for their dance too.
I would agree with that about Bring It On. Like, when I think about Bring It On, a lot of the things that I remember are choreography moments. There's one moment that I just love. It's not necessarily a full choreography moment, but at the end of the one where they get everybody to join the team, it's all happening. So at the end of It's All Happening, they have this moment. First of all, one thing I love is I think they take from Fosse a little bit and they use isolations in it. And they have moments where they've had this full number, full dance number, and then all of a sudden they get to the climax when they do the "You can leave behind the world we know," that part. It's very, very powerful because they all just sort of stand there and it's all very like, it's like tap your foot type movements, and then they get into it. And then at the end when they do the and they just like walk forward, and that last boom is like just a turn away from the audience. I love it. It's not like a super iconic moment in musical theater, but it's something that I think about often, more than I'd like to admit.
No, I agree. I feel like, I mean, I don't want to turn this also into, we already talked about Cats so much. I don't want to also turn this into a Bring It On episode, but I really feel like the show didn't get the love and hype that it deserves. And if you haven't listened to it yet, I really, really, really suggest listening to it, because it definitely has good, you know, good choreography, good music. And I mean, look at the people who worked on it. So mm-hmm. If you don't know, this is also a Lynn and Tommy Kitt show. So
yes. Yeah.
Tom Kitt. So,
and Annie Blankenbuehler.
Yeah. So it had all the great people all mm-hmm. in one spot, but
it just, I think it was just one of those movie to musical that just didn't translate as well as they wanted it to be. Awesome. Well, that's all we got for you today. Where can they contact us?
Yeah. Okay. You can find us. You can email us at mtbcpodcast@gmail.com. Please email us. It really bums me out when I open our email and I see I got three and I get really excited. And then it's TikTok and Spotify and Twitter. Like, cool. Thanks. So you can email us at mtbcpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at mtbcpodcast. This is where we always tweet out all the stuff. Usually we try to do it within that day. It might not be right when the episode releases, but usually within the day, anything we talked about. So like all the clips that we talked about today will all be tweeted out. Or you can find us on TikTok or Instagram. We just do a lot of fun, different theater things on there. So all at mtbcpodcast across all of them.
Yeah, we both, Sarah does more of the TikTok side of things, or well, she does like all the social media side of things, but sometimes I pop up on our TikTok. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Now get out there and learn some new choreography. Woo!